The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Hello, folks. My name is Timothy Hari, and I am in the bunker of SciFiForMe.com, deep in the underground bunker. You can barely see the light. Tiny window.
It's very dark.
It's very dark. Yeah, in fact, we need help because it's very dark down here and we're scared. I am sitting across the room from Mr. Jason Hunt.
Oh, and the older I get, the more light I need in the room to see. One of the reasons why the room got rearranged is so the desk and my keyboard and the computer and everything could be under the brightest light in the room.
Right.
Because I can't see anything.
Yeah.
I'm going blind. I guess.
Well,
I don't know. I'm
getting older. You know, there's a magnetic lock at work that I have to go through every day, and I've got a little key card for it, right?
Yeah.
And it makes a distinct click, right? You can hear it disengage.
Mm-hmm.
And so you scan the key card thing, and it goes beep. And, you know, the little light turns on.
Mm-hmm.
But by that point, you're past the little light turning on. So you hear the beep.
And then you
wait for the click. Right. Well, they had a problem with the door and they fixed it. And in the process of fixing it, the little click went away. They changed the type of magnetic lock or whatever. So it's just like, it's about that loud.
Oh, wow.
And the first time it happened, I'm like, beep. Oh. Wait a minute. Am I going to set off the alarm? Oh, God.
Somebody else. It didn't click.
And I'm like, oh, you know, am I just kidding? Oh, am I? Beep. No? Okay. Oh, no. I'm losing my hearing. It's like, no, they changed the light. Because literally the person on the other side of the door looked at me and went, are you okay? I'm like, well, yeah, I didn't hear the click. Oh, they changed that. Oh, good. So
yeah, it's not just me.
No, but we're getting older. It's okay. But there's a Farscape episode. Where the villain needs more light.
Yeah.
Don't fly this ship into the sun. That's all I'm saying.
My mother and I had a conversation not too long ago. She asked me, she said, when's the last time you had your eyes checked? Because we're getting ready for school and it's coming up. You know, the kid needs to go to the eye doctor and needs to go to the dentist and get school supplies and clothes. And, you know, it's that time of year, right? And when all of this stuff starts to get discussed, and she says, when's the last time you went to the eye doctor? And I thought, let's see, I'm 45, mom's checking on me still. That's okay,
sure.
that's to be expected.
It's timely.
And I got to thinking, I don't remember the last time I got, I think the glasses that I've got now, I have probably had, let's see, these would have been before we got Peaches, the fat beagle, and Peaches passed away three years ago now?
Mm-hmm.
Has it been 3 years? So this would have been 17, 18 years?
Holy crap. Okay, I thought I was bad. Last year I got two new pairs of glasses because I had not been to the eye doctor in something like 10 years, 10 or 11 years. And the glasses I had were basically disintegrating. I had broken them, I had fixed them. I was in the super glue phase of the process.
Yeah.
So clearly I'm very concerned about how I look.
I've got a nose pad missing off of this one.
Okay. You can replace those.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I know. Well, I still have it. It's just not attached.
Oh, it's just not attached. Okay. Yeah. So, I was pleasantly surprised to discover that my eyes had actually stayed the same.
Well, that's good.
I mean, there was a minor little bit of change in one eye, and it got a little tiny bit worse, but it was so, you know, my prescription stayed the same.
Well, mine had been so bad for so long anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my driver's license, when I went to go get it renewed, way back.
Mm-hmm.
This is the eye test that they give you.
Oh, sure.
You know, you stick your head in the thing, and there's three columns of letters to see, right?
In Spock's viewer, yeah.
Yeah, and when I looked, they said, okay, now read the letters in the left column. So I read the letters in the left column. Now read the stuff in the middle. I read the stuff in the middle. Now the stuff in the right column. I said, there isn't anything in the right column. And her head snapped up. She went, what? I said, I don't see anything in the right column. What? She's dumbfounded because the way this, it's a parallax view. So you've got the letters are in each left and right column,
sure,
and they're in the center
right.
for both. So when you're looking in each lens, you're only seeing one piece of
right.
the whole thing. And she said, okay, well, look in the right lens with your left eye. So I did. I went, oh, there they are. I actually saw them, but I literally did not see any of the letters at all. I mean, not even blurs or shapes.
Right.
I mean, it's completely blank. And my vision has been measured out at, last time I checked it was 2200 in my right eye.
Sure.
I'm legally blind in my right eye. I could, if I squint my left eye and I close my eye and I'm looking at you now,
right.
past the edge of the desk here, 3 feet away, everything's a blur.
Oh, my 20/20 vision ends 6 inches from my eyes.
Yeah.
I can, you know, my father's legally blind without his glasses too. If I have that to look forward to, as well. I have driven without my glasses.
Now, see, I'm lucky that
it's
they didn't
kind of
put
terrifying.
That. Yeah, they didn't put that restriction on my driver's license. I got lucky because I can, you know, my left eye compensates for everything, and I can see clearly when I've got both eyes open. But I've noticed as I get older, the computer screens that are at a certain distance, I have to put my glasses on to see the computer screens. But if I'm reading or if I'm looking at something on my phone or anything like that, it's too close.
Ah, sure.
And it starts to twist a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I find myself flipping my glasses up on the top of my head a lot anymore these days. And I was like, oh man, I'm getting old.
I just don't
like being old.
I have to, got to wear the glasses. Otherwise, I can't look at a computer screen. I can't read a book.
Yeah,
and that's actually what we were planning on talking about tonight. Not just the general failings of our eyes.
See what we did there.
We digressed again.
No.
We actually let ourselves in. That's right.
Right into the topic.
Yes, we sort of
because we do that.
Yeah. Well, and we actually the subject actually is reading.
Yes.
And you know it's interesting. In this era of big budget blockbusters, superheroes and science fiction films and fantasy films and all these things that are very much part of the genres that we love and we talk about all the time and we write about on this site, in this time of all this wonderful stuff on the internet, of booming in technology, of all this amazing thing, we're living in the future. You know, we're thank God, we don't have the flying cars, and you know all these great things.
Mm-hmm.
There's an incredible pleasure in reading a book and holding a book in your hands. Now, the nooks and the readers and all those things. Those are kind of cool.
Except now, we come to find out, and this is something we've been talking about here a little bit because it's been a topic of conversation for us off mic, just simply because I have been faced with the challenge of trying to get my youngling to read.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very enjoyable experience for me. Most of everybody in my family reads at some level. My sister doesn't so much because she had to do so much of it for her psychology and her nursing.
Sure.
So, you know, that was one of those things. She just read so much, and it was all medical and biology and all this other stuff. She got burned out on it. But for the most part, everybody in my family reads something. And my son, for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's because he's part of the video game generation or whatnot, he's not a big reader yet. And you know, he likes the Rick Riordan stuff, you know, Percy Jackson and, you know, that ilk, which is fine. And, you know, if that's what he wants to read, he enjoys reading it. That's great. And he can read that. But at some point, he's going to run out of those.
Sure.
And I'm trying to get him to understand that there are other stories that are written by other authors that are just as good, if not better. And, you know, I've handed him Space Cadet. I've handed him Splinter of the Mind's Eye. You know, the Lord of the Rings books are still sitting here waiting for him. I mean, he's not quite ready for that yet, but I've got the Gamage Cup, and I've got Wrinkle in Time, and, you know, all of these different things that he could read that are really good stories. And it's just, I'm like, well, okay, here's a Riordan book. And, yeah, I haven't read them, so I don't know. They're probably just like the Harry Potter stuff. Sure. You know, they're easy reads, and they tell a nice yarn. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be memorable like a lot of other stories that you would run across. But, okay, you know, hey, you like to read it? That's great. You know, if he wants to read that, it's fine. He's reading. Mm-hmm. That's the key. And one of the things that we have talked about is the fact that the more you read, and I'm trying to get him to understand this, the more you read, the more you have an ability to appreciate other people's point of view.
Sure.
The more you have an understanding of how the world works, how to deal with people. It's not just reading science fiction and, oh, golly gee whiz, ray guns, pew pew, or dragons and wizards and whatnot. You're learning, you know, how do people behave? Mm-hmm. You know, because in these stories, there are rude characters, there are evil characters, there are good people. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of different types of personality types that you're going to run into in your life.
Sure.
And here are examples of them. All of these different stories and all of these different circumstances and stuff.
Well, the best literature opens up a window into human behavior. What makes us good? What makes us bad? What makes us people? What makes us human?
Plus, critical thinking skills, problem solving skills. Mm-hmm. What would Jim Kirk do in this circumstance? Well, what would Picard do? What would Harry Dresden do? These kinds of things. Luke Skywalker.
Have you seen that? Speaking. Have you seen? And I digress already. But have you seen the little photo floating around like Facebook or something where it says percentage of crew members killed off by captains of the Enterprise?
No, I haven't seen that one.
And actually, Kirk is actually fairly low on the list. It's like Archer's got killed off the largest percentage of his crew.
Sure. Well, and the other thing too is how do firefighters do things? How do spies do things? Uh-huh. You're learning about the world in all of this, even if it's a science fiction piece or if it's a mystery, if it's a thriller or whatever.
Right.
And so I'm trying to get him to understand on various different levels that reading is very good for him from a physical, mental standpoint. Not only is it fun, it engages the in imagination, and it helps you to pass the time. It gives you something relatively constructive to do to spend your time rather than sitting in front of the TV all the time.
Sure.
And we even got to the point where I thought, okay, well, if he enjoys video games so much, we'll get him a Kindle, we'll get a tablet, so he can read books electronically. So he's on a screen. That went over about as well as everything else. But it turns out, I ran across this article on mic.com, mic.com, mic being an abbreviation for microphone. And the headline, "Science has great news for people who read actual books." This is by Rachel Great. It's dated September 22nd, 2014. Mm-hmm. And I guess, I don't know, it must have popped up on my Facebook when Facebook changed things to top stories as opposed to most recent.
Sure.
Like they do.
Right.
And I'm reading this article, and it's very interesting what it says. Mm-hmm. And I would be interested to see an update on a lot of this information here, because it's dated now almost a year old. Quoting from the story, "It's no secret that reading is good for you. Just 6 minutes of reading is enough to reduce stress by 68%. And numerous studies have shown that reading keeps your brain functioning effectively as you age. One study even found that elderly individuals who read regularly are 2.5 times less likely to develop Alzheimer's than their peers. But not all forms of reading are created equal. And this goes on to talk about the difference between reading on an electronic device as opposed to reading an actual physical book. And, you know, you talk about Captain Kirk. Captain Kirk being anachronistic in this regard, and we can thank Samuel T. Coghlan for that. You remember in the episode Court Martial, he said books. You know, Coghlan was really big on physical books and right. having this something tangible that you can put in your hand. And in subsequent stories, people have made that connection whenever, you know, in the tie-in, the franchise novels, whenever it talks about Kirk's love of books.
Right.
Every now and again, it'll say, you know, he got that from Sam Coghlan. And we even see that in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, the real one, when he's reading Tale of Two Cities.
Right.
He's actually reading a book. Spock gives him a book because he knows Kirk collects these. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out that reading an actual physical book has more benefit than reading on an electronic device. A 2014 study found that readers of a short mystery story on a Kindle were significantly worse at remembering the order of events than those who read the same story in paperback. Lead researcher Anne Mengen of Norway's Stavanger University concluded that the haptic and tactile feedback of a Kindle does not provide the same support for mental reconstruction of a story as a print pocketbook does. The article goes on to say basically physically turning the pages of a book helps you remember the sequence of events. It's that tangible, tactile, the physical thing that you do as the story progresses.
Right. Well, you're building
that
it,
helps you remember.
It's a sequence.
You're building. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the other thing, too, and this is something we've talked about before, the fact that on the web, everything that we write is all short sentences.
Right.
Tiny bits, little blocks, because nobody wants to read anything long anymore, right? Well, this says, reading long sentences without links is a skill you need but can lose if you don't practice. Reading long literary sentences sans links and distractions is actually a serious skill that you lose if you don't use it. Before the internet, the brain read in a linear fashion, taking advantage of sensory details to remember where key information was in the book by layout. As we increasingly read on screens, our reading habits have adapted to skim text rather than really absorb the meaning. A 2006 study found that people reading on screens in an F pattern, reading the entire top line, but then only scanning through the text along the left side of the page. This sort of non-linear reading reduces comprehension and actually makes it more difficult to focus the next time you sit down with a longer piece of text. So, what this is saying is something we've said before. The internet is making everyone stupid because your comprehension level, your comprehension skills are diminished the more you read online.
Well, there's certainly a tendency that I don't think anyone can argue that the way the internet is designed for information, getting information out.
Squirrel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Is short bursts. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, here's the headline, here's the clickbait headline, and here's the three paragraphs of the story. And
did you see the clickbait headline that CinemaBlend said about Marvel is rebranding the Infinity Stone? Well, no, they're not. But you know, that's a completely different article that we'll talk about on level 117.
Right.
But it's that kind of thing. This here, Tufts University neuroscientist Marianne Wolf worries, quote, the superficial way we read during the day is affecting us when we have to read with more in-depth processing. She says that individuals are finding it increasingly difficult to sit down and immerse themselves in a novel. Researchers have started a slow reading movement as a way to counteract the difficulty in making it through a book.
Well, what's interesting is that we also know that the light from our computer screens and the light from our cell phones and our Kindles and our readers and all this stuff is interrupting our sleep patterns. Because it's the same kind of light as we get during the day. Okay, so at night, if you're staring at a computer screen, you're basically telling your brain it's daytime. And so it makes it harder for you to sleep.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and so it's the same thing with your cell phone. So your cell phone is sitting by the bed, and you've got that little light coming out of your cell phone until it fades away. But it's still, you've got that out of the corner of your eye, you're seeing, quote unquote, daylight.
Right.
And they say, they recommend that you put that away and like spend 30 minutes or so reading a book or doing something that is away from that kind of thing. So give your brain, because no matter how smart we are, no matter how much we've evolved from the hunter-gatherer, roam the landscape just trying to survive thing,
I haven't evolved very far past that.
we just have more stuff to do with it.
Still just trying to survive.
That's right. Yeah. But the same thing is that we're still programmed the way we're wired is nighttime, daytime, sleeping patterns, things like that.
Right.
So it's something that is now take that and you've got this you're reading stuff off the internet and you've got these little short little bursts and things like that, but you've got the I'm staring at a laptop right now, and it's like it's the screen. So it doesn't surprise me at all that we are we're kind of programming ourselves a little bit different, because we're already doing it. We're already doing it in the sense of we're not wired to be staring at this stuff in the middle of the night,
right?
Because it interrupts our sleep patterns. It's certainly going to interrupt the way that we are processing information. One of my favorite places to be online, if I'm spending a lot of time online, is something like Wikipedia, where they've got long articles.
Why would you go to Wikipedia?
Because sometimes they have long articles on things.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like, okay, we talk about comic books a lot. So, you can go to, and you can sit there and get the entire history of a comic book publication there, right?
Well, that's true, yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of data there. And it's that's actually the kind of, I like exploring that kind of depth of thing. But that's, again, we're looking at something long article. Mm. I'm wired that way. I love short stories, but I'm not sure. I honestly prefer novels to short stories.
Well, and that's something too that we've talked about here, as far as what kind of articles we want to publish, because in this day and age, all of the different sites like ours are doing the short burst articles.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And, we talk about, and I've made it a point several times to mention that I would like to see us doing more articles like Starlog used to do.
Right.
And those were not short, but they were also not electronic. You had a magazine that you had in your hand, and you held it, and you turned the pages, and you read the story, and you read the article and the interview and whatever. Whether it was an interview with an actor or an interview with a production designer or a composer or an author or an artist or whatever, these interviews and profiles and features went 2, 3, 4, 5 pages.
Oh, yeah.
They were not just pick it up, glance at it, done, you're finished.
Right.
And if you did that, you missed a lot. And I don't know that people, well, my son's age maybe, would probably not even think about picking up a magazine or something physical, tangible, to read an article.
Well, Meg, I think you still see some of that in some of the genre stuff. Gaming magazines, you can actually find 2, 3, 4 page articles on game developers and game things. I think there's a certain part of that culture of the, if you were to print out a walkthrough, for a video game to be paid. You know, there's a mindset there. There's a mind of processing information, and I think some of the longer form story games, probably bear some relatedness to say reading a long novel. You know, because I mean, you're looking at a long form storytelling, but somebody can probably tell me I'm wrong on that, but I don't know the science. But we have one of the, as much as it pains us sometimes. Looking at the word counts on some of the articles I've written, it's like, good Lord, did I really mean to write this long? At the same time, that's just the kind of the way I see it. Yeah. It's just kind of the way that, and I think there's some benefit to that. Now, obviously, it's changed, okay? Because that was a monthly. That was a monthly magazine.
Yeah.
You know, and so a lot of the great, you know, the medium has certainly changed. So you're getting stuff much more constant. It's that constant stream of information. So you've got, you know, a 3-paragraph article because you've got to keep putting out, you know, 4 or 5 of those articles a day, every day, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure, and that's all the information that you have about a particular topic until you find out something new.
Sure, and I mean, in all fairness here, the Mike article is not that long. However,
it's longer than a lot.
It is longer than a lot, and it's full of lots of neat little links to some very, very useful information.
Yes.
But it's very, very interesting. There has been back when I was a used book dealer, back when I was a book dealer, period. I was in the retail book world at that point. There was when there were two big nightmare scenarios. One, Amazon was going to destroy the bookstore.
Oh yes.
Yes. Okay. And there is a certain, yes, there is a argument to be made that the convenience of ordering something offline or online, from online, is you know, great for on the consumer level. So you can sit there and get, you know, you can look at a lot of different books. You can pick the one you want, get it delivered, ta-da, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
It had an impact on the physical bookstores. But it didn't destroy them. You know, the big bookstores all have, big bookstores and small bookstores all have online presences. You can do that to anything, but there's always that percentage of people who want to go into a bookstore, pick up the book, flip through it, read the first page, skip to the end, whatever it is that, you know, but there is a tactile component to reading a book that is important to people. And it's not just people our age and older. I think it may be something that is kind of built in to some people, because there are very, very young children who really enjoy that tactile sense of reading a book. The other big thing was, of course, the e-reader.
Mm-hmm.
And this was going to, you know, here's all the books in the world on your tiny, tiny tablet. This will change everything. Well, there is a certain usefulness to it. I kind of would like to own one, which I don't, because I'd like to be able to have that option.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I have bookshelves at home that are overflowing.
I've seen your bookshelves.
Yes.
Yes.
And there's a reason for that. It's because I like books. And I think there is something about physically holding the book, physically turning the pages, and taking the time to just relax and get lost in the story.
Yeah.
And I think that actually from an artistic standpoint, the author has a chance to tell a story in the words they want to choose. And you go to the internet, and you get those little quick, you're not looking for, in most stories online, most of the things you're getting from the online world, you're not going for writing style. You're going for information.
Right.
And there's a big, big difference between reading something for straight information and reading something for pleasure, reading something for entertainment, reading something for
The escape.
The escape.
The fun.
Yeah, exactly. True. Reading it for fun.
By the way, this article is 845 words.
I have written TV show reviews 3 or 4 times that long.
I know. I'm like, that's not a very long. I mean, it looks longer than it actually is. It's 845 words. Now, because we do, and when we bring on new people, mm-hmm. I tell them, you know, usually our stuff anywhere between 1,000 and 1,500 words.
Sure.
And that, to me, feels low. It feels short.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I know our word counts are all over the place depending on what it is that we
do. Sure.
But, you know, you look at, you know, like the most recent, you know, the articles that Casey did on the E3 conference.
Mm-hmm.
He broke those out into, I mean, six articles.
Right.
And they're not short.
Right.
And they dig deep, really, into each of the different companies that presented at E3, mm-hmm. you know, Nintendo and Microsoft and
sure.
Electronic Arts and that kind of thing. And that kind of article is not something that you're going to find too many places online because of how long it is.
Right. Well, and
the other thing too, and this is something that we can talk about when we come back from the break, is the fact that in this day and age when we're so electronically focused, and I'll say that in a broad sense of the term, but the movies and the TV,
mm-hmm.
I think we're losing touch with our literary heritage, especially in terms of genre.
Mm.
And we can talk about that when we get back from the break. You're going to hear first from SuperheroStuff.com and then Atomic Cotton. And they are sponsors and partners, and we do appreciate their support here on H2O and on SciFiForMe.com. So we're going to take a break, let you hear from them, and we will be back to talk more about books. Books, I say. Right after this.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Where can you get Age of Ultron stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at SuperheroStuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. SuperheroStuff.com, where heroes shop.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at AtomicCotton.com. Atomic Cotton, shirts and art for fans by fans.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Our Marvel discussion on Level 117, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi for Me TV. That's our YouTube channel where we have interviews, convention panel video, and Week in Review, where we deliver a digest of the news of the week. All part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out. Sci-Fi for Me Radio and Sci-Fi for Me TV. All part of SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Sci-Fi for Me Radio, where all of us are madmen in a box.
Don't you like books?
Oh, I like them fine. But a computer takes less space.
Huh. A computer, huh? I got one of these in my office. Contains all the precedents. A synthesis of all the great legal decisions written throughout time. I never use it.
Why not?
I've got my own system. Books, young man. Books, thousands of them. If time wasn't so important, I'd show you something. My library. Thousands of books.
What would be the point?
This is where the law is. Not in that homogenized, pasteurized, synthesized. Do you want to know the law? The ancient concepts in their own language? Learn the intent of the men who wrote them? From Moses to the tribunal of Alpha 3 Books.
And that is Samuel T. Coghlan opining on the importance of books. Greg Cox, who is an editor at Tor, he posted on his Facebook page the other day. He's watching Geeks with Drinks.
Right.
Geeks the Drink or whatever, the sci-fi game show.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is Greg writing. A sci-fi game show where self-declared geeks compete in a sci-fi trivia contest. In last night's app, both teams were doing okay as long as the questions concerned movies, TV shows, computer games, and comic books.
Mm-hmm.
Then the producers made the mistake of asking them to name the author of the book that the movie I, Robot was based on. Crickets.
Oh, no.
It was painful to watch, not just because not one of the six contestants knew the answer, but because they all looked so hopelessly lost and at sea when asked a question concerning, you know, books. Neil Gaiman, one of them suggested hesitantly, while the others looked helplessly at each other, unable to even muster a guess.
Hey, at least they actually named an actual author.
Yeah. Well, and he said, I would have been happy if they'd just been able to toss out some decent guesses. Heinlein, Bradbury.
Right.
You know. Apparently, a half dozen geeks could only come up with the name of one author and had never heard of Isaac Asimov. And I fear for our fandom. I fear for our young generations full of mush because they don't know the literary heritage of science fiction as well as they should.
I am going to say that there's always going to be that core group. I don't think we're ever going to lose them because there's always going to be those folks who are going to be like we are, and it doesn't matter what age they are, who's going to prefer to pick up a book. And they're going to go back to a book if they see a movie they like or they're a TV show and they find that it's based on something. And they're going to want to look at the source material.
One would hope.
Well, you got the Star Trek fans who are still reading the Star Trek books. But the Star Wars fans, the uproar when Disney announced that we were going to lose the expanded universe.
The new story group, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
Now, technically, we didn't lose it.
Well, I know. But that's what it's
not canon.
Right.
They just officially made it not canon,
exactly.
And that's
but
all it was.
It wouldn't have mattered if people weren't reading those books.
True.
Okay, so, but
well,
yes.
And I would say, too, that it wouldn't have mattered if we'd never got another movie again.
Sure. But you also have to look at the, and we weren't just talking about this, actually. Fandom exploded. Okay, the tent got bigger.
Yeah.
So you look at, you can have someone who is a Marvel movie, their range of knowledge. My daughter is a huge, she can tell you just about anything about the a significant chunk of the Marvel universe cinematically. She doesn't really read the comic books.
Right.
Okay. So she's going to have all kinds of depth within the context of the movie universe, but going back and reading the comics, that's not something that particularly interests her.
Yeah.
It's the same way with a lot of books. when you go and you watch something like, say, okay, we got Wayward Pines just wrapped up, and it is based on a book called The Pines, and it's very, very different from the book because adaptations.
Sure,
right.
And as you do.
Sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's bad, okay? Intelligence, the TV show, which I gave up reviewing because it was hurting my brain so much, is based on a novel that it has nothing to do with.
Well, The $6 Million Man.
You
could go back even further than that. 2001 was based on a short story.
Well, yeah, and the novel version is what we get when Arthur C. Clarke reads the screenplay.
Yeah.
because it was basically, the novel was written based on the screenplay that he and Kubrick came up with.
Yeah.
But Sentinel is very, very different than what ultimately 2001 became. As much as I love Something Wicked This Way Comes, the movie, because Jason Robards is just...
Well, it's Jason Robards.
The father you want in that movie. It is not necessarily the best adaptation of the novel.
Right.
Although it's in many ways, I would argue it might have been the best adaptation you could have hoped for. Because there's a difference between the two mediums, between visual storytelling and reading something on the page.
Right, because there's a lot of internal stuff on the page you don't get in a movie or a TV show.
And that's something that you cannot really get in the visual mediums in the way that you can get in a book, or even in a comic book. I mean, less in a comic book, because again, there's a visual component. But say you look at something like Lynch's Dune. Lots of internal monologues up on the screen.
Yeah.
And in some cases, it ground the story to a halt. Because that's not really where, it's... the voiceover works mostly in film noir and not too many places outside of it.
Yeah.
And
a lot of that is because it's used sparingly.
Oh, yeah.
It's used in very specific places for very specific purposes.
Sure,
it's not just let's tell you the whole story and the narrative.
Well, and don't tell you what you're looking at on screen, which is a big mistake that people make with voiceovers is, and then I was walking down the street. I could see you walking down the street. Stop telling me. But there's a level of depth. we all know that when you read a book and they adapt that book that you love into the film.
Yeah.
You are going to see changes. We're getting the fourth Hunger Games movie is about to come out.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
The books are huge. Okay. The Harry Potter films. The books are huge. And the reason that the books became popular is not because the first book was actually a work of genius. The first book is a fairly pedestrian. And I'm going to get lynched here.
In either franchise.
Yeah. It's a fairly pedestrian fantasy novel. By the numbers. And that's not a bash on J.K. Rowling. It's not... Her later books are much, much better. What's interesting about that series is that it aged with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Harry got older at about the same rate as the readers did.
See, and I read those when I was older. I was reading, I guess maybe I was in my late 20s or something when I read those, just because, okay, what is all of this?
Sure.
So read them. And they're okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a good read, but it's like we were talking about earlier. It's not something that's going to stay with you. It's not something that is, it may stand the test of time for a while. But if you put the Harry Potter books up against something like Foundation or The Lord of the Rings or Stranger in a Strange Land,
I would agree with you, and I will disagree with you too, because I think that we end up with
they're not that great. I mean, they're not great books. They're not groundbreaking. Earth-shattering.
No. They're not groundbreaking. But
classics.
I think to some degree it is classic. It's classic coming of age in a fantasy world kind of storytelling. The depth that she gave to it was pretty unusual for a young adult series, and
I'll give you that.
Because those books were aimed at a younger audience. That first book gets them right when they're in their, their 12s, 13s, their Harry's age, right? So for the next however long that actually ran, because that was quite a while, the publishing run of those books. Like I said, the more she, the character got older with the audience, and the complexity of the books got greater as well.
Right.
So you look at that first book, it's very much just a young adult book. You get to the final book in the series, and there's a lot of depth there. There's a lot of discussion of big concepts, of death, of honor. I mean, important things that you would not have gotten out of in the first book. And that, I think, one of the reasons that she's a successful author is because she grew as an author as well. I mean, she got better.
Well, sure, yeah. There's that.
And versus something like the Twilight books, which are, and admittedly, this is an opinion. I think they're awful.
Yeah.
Okay. Because they're not. There's a lot of reasons they're awful, but mostly for me, it's poor writing style, and there's no growth there. Not to bash on, enjoy them, you can, people can enjoy them. By all means,
it's
I don't
funny
like
that
them.
You mentioned those because we've got Sonya and I talk about them over at, in XY,
right?
Where now Sonya likes the books mm-hmm. more than she likes the movies. Hates the movies.
Sure.
Can't stand the movies. The movies have outlived their usefulness, as it were, because they're, for as adaptations go, they're not that great,
right?
In her opinion, she mm-hmm. thinks the books are much better because they tell the story
and
better.
I'm happy she enjoys them. I was back in my retail book days, and an advanced reader, I got all kinds of, I used to read stuff months and months in advance of it being published. And
we get piles of that.
I know
now.
Exactly.
Too bad nobody reads them.
But it was. We got a copy of that, and I read the Anne Rice books when I was in college mm-hmm. and after, and really enjoyed the first few of them and things like that. So I like horror stuff. So I was like, oh, the vampire series. Oh, let's check out this. And I'm like five pages in, going, wow. I do not like the writing in this book. This is awful. But again, it's aimed at a different audience. It's not necessarily aimed at me.
Yeah.
But what ends up happening with, I think, for some of this stuff is that you look at Heinlein or Niven or Asimov or Clarke.
Le Guin.
Oh, just
Cole,
yeah, but
McCaffrey.
We remember when that's kind of what there was. Okay, there's we the media explosion we have now. There's for all the great range of entertainment we've got now. We've got Star Wars, Superman. The Avengers and the explosion from the 70s on. Okay, so much of that great stuff was published way before that.
Right.
It broke new ground. It changed the way that people were telling these kind of stories. And as much as it pains me to say it, there is always a generational thing where the folks who look back at that earlier stuff, mm-hmm. which in many ways is product of its time for style.
Right,
and it's not the style anymore. Asimov wrote great speculative science stories. His characterization, but that was not his biggest concern. He was
looking at concepts.
Right, he wasn't
big ideas.
Yeah. So one of the things that always kind of tripped up the Foundation series for adapting it into a movie is that in some of the books, in some parts of the books, it's like, well, who is this person? I mean, there's not a lot of depth to the characters.
Right.
Which, on one hand, for a filmmaker, could be like, I can give this character depth. I can shape out the character. For an actor, that could be a lot of fun. And if you do it right, it could be really cool. If you do it poorly, well...
you get the prequels.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think it becomes this thing where you... That is the generation that answers Neil Gaiman is the generation that might also be answering Grant Morrison
Yeah, but you look at almost any interview with Grant Morrison, and he's quoting philosophers and historians and literature from...
Well, here, but you also look at,
I mean, he name drops. Descartes and this kind of thing.
Your Morrison and your Alan Moores.
Yeah.
And your Gaimans and your Terry Pratchett's, rest in peace.
Mm-hmm.
These are guys who sucked up all that literature. They absorbed it.
Right.
And they let it percolate in their brain, and they let it, stimulate their imaginations. I think our biggest hope is that some of these names, some of these people who are this generation's names, the ones who are telling those stories, right, you know, reaching out, are getting that kind of name dropping that people are catching. And there's some hope for this. For the first season of True Detective, huge speculation about the King in Yellow. And this led to like massive hunting about who the King in Yellow is. Well, the King in Yellow is a literary character.
Right.
And so sales of the books boomed because people were trying to figure out. And they turns out the King in Yellow, spoilers for last season's True Detective, not really that big of a deal in context of the show. But it inspired people to actually go to bookstores.
Yeah.
And I think that for some of this, things like True Detective and maybe American Horror Story, and
maybe Penny Dreadful.
Wayward Pines. These arcs, these stories are being told in 8 episodes, 10 episodes, and then they're done.
Yeah.
You could sit there, if you never watched the next season, you're fine.
Right.
If it doesn't get a next season, you know, they tell a contained story. These are kind of almost books on screen.
Mm-hmm.
We're
going to get with Shadowhunters.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get the first Lost Instruments book,
right?
Retold because mm-hmm. the movie just bombed. And I'm actually, I don't necessarily have a personal stake in it, but I actually hope that the Shadowhunters series does really well because the lead actress, Catherine McNamara,
mm-hmm.
is a local. She's from here.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And I actually had her in one of my movies once.
That's right.
So, you know, way, way, way back in the day. I think she was like 10. She was just starting out.
So surely you can get an interview with her.
Well, that's my hope.
Yeah.
Send her a note and say, hey, Kat. But yeah, it's one of those things where they're taking a season
mm-hmm.
to do a book.
Right.
So, yeah, you are going to have the beginning, the middle, and the end of that particular story. But, yeah, I think you're dealing with a disconnect, though, with this generation wanting to do everything online.
Well,
it's how they've been wired.
Well, I think
you get your Kindles and your tablet readers.
But be careful. We do have to be careful to not make it quite that sweeping a statement. Yes, there is a tendency. There's an ease of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they spend a lot more time online than we did. Of course, we didn't have.
Yeah, we didn't have it when we were their age.
And it's certainly, you know, a lot more than our parents do. although my father spends a fair amount of time online. My mother spends a fair amount of time online.
My dad spends a lot of time looking at the weather.
Sure.
You go into the house, the laptop is showing a Doppler map.
There you go.
You know, that's it. I mean, and that's become a hobby for him.
Mm-hmm, sure.
You know, meteorology, he's actually doing, you know, he's studying all of this stuff.
I know a couple other people who do that as well.
He's not just looking at it just to look at it, because when I was growing up,
mm-hmm.
it was funny. We'd go to Arkansas to visit my mom's family.
Mm-hmm.
And 9 times out of 10, if there was anybody in the living room at my aunt's house, the Weather Channel was on.
Right.
Don't know why.
It's noise.
I think it actually is
a generational
noise.
Thing. So I know a couple older folks who actually find the Weather Channel and the constant updates that you can get online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very, very interesting. I think it's easier, and you and I spend a fair amount of time online just for the necessities of what we do.
Yeah, it's a work thing for me.
Although I actually spend less time because of the change in the day job.
Right.
Which
is probably a blessing for you.
Well, it is.
It's a blessing and a curse.
To some degree it is. I would agree. But at the same time, There are certainly kids, you know, the new generations and the new generations following them. There's always going to be those folks who are going to pick up the books. They're going to they like the tactile sensation of it. That seems to be something that we aren't going to breed out of us.
I hope not.
Well, and I think there's a.
Well, although at the end of this article here on Mike.com, 3/4 of Americans. Now this is published in 2014.
Right. Uh-huh.
3/4 of Americans, 18 and older, report reading at least one book in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
A number which has fallen.
Mm-hmm.
And e-books currently make up between 15% to 20% of all book sales.
Well, but I'd also like to point out that we have known in the course of our lives, we grew up with people who did not like to read. You probably have family members outside of the kid who don't like to read.
As far as I know, I don't. Except for my sister.
Okay, well, there's reasons, but
an exception, right. Because yeah, it was one of those things where that was a circumstance that turned mm-hmm. her off of books. But before that, she was a reader just like anybody else.
Sure, but there's a lot of difference. I know people who like to read magazines who don't like to read books.
Yeah.
Okay. And my mother, given the choice for a long, long time, for entertainment, she would read uh-huh. romance novels. Anyone who meets my mother would go, what, romance novels? Seriously? Because it's
an escape.
It's pure escapism.
Yeah.
And she would read the things like the Harlequins, which are they're cookie cutter. You know, I actually sat down because I read 3 Harlequin romances in an hour. Now, admittedly, I do read very, very fast.
Right.
But there's a certain amount of you don't need to read every word with those mm-hmm. things. It's like you could.
You read it in an F pattern, you read it in top line, and skip the rest.
And but then you can completely recall the entire plot because it's the right. exact same plot every yeah. time. But the names change. But I think.
when I was, I guess, 10, mm-hmm. the summer after 5th grade,
mm-hmm.
I blew through the entire series, The Three Investigators.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure.
One right after the other. Mm-hmm. And I would be reading until 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And my mom never stopped me. I was reading. It was summer.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not hurting myself, so it's fine. And I remember one night getting done with a book and set it down, and I looked at the clock, and it was something like 2 o'clock in the morning. Oh, I'm not tired. I picked up the next one, and I just kept going.
Sure.
And I would be able to go through one of those in a matter of hours.
Right.
Because, you know, I'm reading all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fairly easy reads, and sure. you know, they're written at, you know, they're written for that age level, so they're not complicated mm-hmm. stories. And you know, I could still pick up one now and read it and still enjoy it.
Sure.
Because they're fun books.
Yeah. I not too long ago reread some of the Encyclopedia Brown.
Oh yeah.
Stories I found actually had one of those, and it kind of.
Well, see, and you learn things when you read Encyclopedia Brown.
Well, yeah, yeah,
that's
very
where
true.
I learned when you faint, you fall forward. I learned that from Encyclopedia Brown.
Yeah, it's just. I think that,
and I also learned too that when men and women go on a date, the men sit facing the crowd. The old etiquette days,
uh-huh, right?
The men would sit with the women could sit with their back to the room,
right?
The men would sit so where they could see the room, so right. they could see. It's a defensive thing, so mm-hmm, sure. I can see anybody coming toward us,
right?
And there was this one mystery where they were figuring something out, and Encyclopedia Brown knew because they had sat the opposite way
right.
that something was off kilter, and he says, "That's your person." And I was like, "Wait, what?" And I had to go back and look, and that's the reason why. But you learn things from books.
Well, you do learn things, and I think that you have. There's a level of depth that you can get in a book that even the best TV show, even the best movie, you're just not going to get. And yep. as much as Peter Jackson attempted to cram everything into, the Hobbit movies especially, mm-hmm. The Lord of the Rings the best thing, one of the best things I absolutely loved about the Lord of the Rings movies was when the DVDs came out and the extras.
Yeah.
See, that was the rabbit hole I would happily go down through the visual medium, but the depth that you got in, Tolkien was a historian.
Mm-hmm.
He believed, and he was creating, he was building,
and he was a theologian.
Well, a linguist.
Yeah,
I mean, the whole reason, one of the primary driving forces from Lord of the Rings was that he wanted to invent a new language, and then he had to build a world around it. Because what use is a language without a history behind it?
Did you see? There's a thing going around on the internet. You want to talk about the disconnect between
a thing going around on the internet?
Yeah,
a thing.
Don't look at it too hard. You might catch it.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's a fan theory.
Okay.
You know this thing, and it's talking about the Lord of the Rings movies.
Sure.
And it was one of these theories that they came up with as to why Gandalf didn't just use the eagles fly them to Mordor, to Mount Doom and destroy
right.
the ring.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was very, very, very well thought out theory. You know, well, he didn't take this path because this, and he didn't take this and that, and, you know, fought the Balrog, and that's where the plan kind of went awry when he said, "Fly, you fools!" You know, he's about to fall down the chasm.
Right.
He, you know, this is saying, well, maybe, you know, the hope is that somebody in the Fellowship would figure it out, that you got to ask the eagles. And I tell you, the comment thread on that it was a perfect illustration of what we're talking about, the disconnect between people who read
right.
and people just watch the movie.
Yep.
Because, I don't know how many people sit there and goes, well, the reason the eagles didn't do it is because they refused to do it. And if you had read the stories,
right.
you know, it's one of those things where it's like, this is a very well thought out theory,
mm-hmm.
but no.
Well, but you lack a necessary context for some of this stuff.
Right.
How it should have ended?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Which apparently is not pronounced Hishi.
What?
Yeah. It's actually pronounced something. It's different. Hizzy. Yeah.
Either one of them.
The face you just made is exactly what the internet, the face the internet made when they did a thing for San Diego Comic-Con. They did a live villain bar there.
Oh, yeah.
And which I have not seen any footage of. I would love to see that. But it's like people sat there and went, wait, it's not pronounced Hishi? Seriously. So, but anyway, they did the Lord of the Rings one.
Oh.
And it was about with the eagles. It's like, why don't we just call the eagles? We're not calling the eagles. So I said, let's call the eagles. Fine, we'll call the eagles. And then it drops it, and it's like we'll distract, Aragorn goes off and distracts Sauron, and the eagles fly from it, drop it in, and Sauron's like, "Oh, crap." Ta-da! It's story's over. But
context matters.
Context matters.
Yeah.
And you have that depth. The as much fun as good as if good and fun it was watching Daniel Radcliffe grow up as Harry Potter, there is a depth to the character and those stories. As much as Alan Rickman, and I guess spoilers for a series that's over, as much as Alan Rickman sells Severus Snape as both somebody you love to hate
mm-hmm.
and then someone who's got a tragic hero.
Right.
The depth of that is much, much deeper in the books. If you're a fan of the books, you're going to get more out of it.
Have you seen the fan edit that takes Snape's story and rearranges it chronologically?
I have not.
I haven't sat and watched the whole thing, but apparently it's one of those that says, if you watch it this way,
mm-hmm.
Snape is a completely different character. And at the end of it, you're sitting there just devastated at the loss of this heroic figure, and I'm like, okay.
Well, it's as we get into a digression of Harry Potter.
No, we're talking about books.
Well, yeah, but Rowling and Rickman, she told him early on that Snape is the hero,
mm-hmm.
Or in many ways, at least one of the heroes of the story. So I think there's some very interesting stuff there. That again, context. If you just watch the films, if you don't get the sense, there's more to Snape on the page.
Yeah.
And I think that.
Well, there's more to everybody on the page.
Sure, sure. And even something like, say, the Star Trek books or the Star Wars books or the Doctor Who books or whatever it is, or if you're going back, if you come from the source material of being the genre picture or TV show or whatever, you're able to go into depth of character. And sometimes it works really, really well when you have the actual character actor playing the part,
yeah,
being the writer. Not always, but sometimes it,
I remember. I remember when I picked up The Hunt for Red October.
Mm-hmm.
After seeing the movie.
Sure.
And they go, hey, this is a pretty cool movie. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's based on a book. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a reader. I want to read the book.
Right.
And so I got The Hunt for Red October, and there's so much more in that book.
Oh, sure.
That's not in the movie. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of stuff in that book that's not in the movie. And there's even a mention in Hunt for Red October, which is the first book that got published.
Right.
But it's not the first book chronologically.
Oh, no.
Patriot Games happens before Red October, but it was published later.
Right.
But that incident is referenced in Red October. So, it's like, Jack Ryan, that thing over in England with the embassy and the terrorists and stuff, that gets mentioned in Red October. I'm like, where's that story? Wait, what was that?
Well, it's world building and character building, and it takes you down a road that you and I, we've talked about, last week we were talking about the, and we weren't talking about it on air as much, but there's the, you can do things in books that you can't necessarily do in 2 hours of a film,
right,
or 44 minutes or 42 minutes in an episode. You can tell stories that are very, very complex and troubling and still make you care about characters who are flawed.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about the Stephen Donaldson books, the Thomas Covenant, the Gap books.
Right.
Where you're given characters who are at least at first glance difficult and problematic and hard characters to care about, but then you could, because you have the time, the depth to dive into them and shape and give the audience an understanding, an empathy for the character.
Well, and that's the other thing here on this article that talks about reading also increases empathy, and that's something we talked about, and it's something I've tried to get my son to understand, is learning how to deal with people, learning how to understand points of view, understand belief systems, and how opinions change and how people change as they
sure.
go through circumstances and whatnot. It is much easier. Well, it's less of a challenge to empathize with an anti-hero.
Oh yeah,
on the page rather than on the screen.
Well, your anti-heroes on the screen. As much as I love film, and as much as I love television, and as much as I make films, there is a certain amount of shorthand.
Oh yeah,
that goes in because you have got to grab the audience right away.
Right.
And so,
and nowadays, every anti-hero is Wolverine.
there's a lot to say to that. With your longer form storytelling, your 8-hour novels, your 10-hour novels, you can get more depth in there. But for a large chunk of that stuff, it's got to be that he arrives on the motorcycle in a leather jacket. Well, clearly, he's the bad boy roguish hero.
That's right.
He's dressed all in black, and the first scene we see is he's just killed a man. I'm thinking he might be the bad guy.
Exactly.
And Star Wars, okay? The first time Darth Vader.
Exactly.
Bam.
Yep.
You know exactly who the bad guy is in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And it's incredibly effective. But at the same time,
it's effective when it's done right.
It is effective when it's done right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you don't necessarily have the layer of depth. Now, sometimes you don't need it.
Right.
Prequels. Nobody needed to know the Darth Vader's tragic backstory. It was not necessary. We knew it, we knew everything we needed to know about Darth Vader. The temptation is, I get the temptation. I mean,
oh sure, sure.
But at the same time, there is a balancing act now.
But see, at the same time, though, if you're going to tell that story that you've hinted at,
mm-hmm.
it needs to be consistent with the hints that you've given.
Oh, that would be useful too.
Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah. Don't don't decide you want to change the story after you've already told us the story.
He was already a good pilot.
Unless you have a really good way to make that work, because uh-huh. you can do that too. You know, because yeah. it's. But at the same time, it's you look at these. You look at this information here, and you combine it with the fact that these screens are messing with our sleep cycles and things like that. Mm. It's a good argument to, you know, enjoy your TV shows, and you know, I love, you know, two seasons of Penny Dreadful. I'm looking forward to it coming back. I'm actually one of like the five people apparently enjoying True Detective this season. everybody's broken. I love stories forever. It's the film noir guy in me. I love a bunch. You know, none of these people are well. this is interesting. And, you know, give me that sort of stuff. I love it. But at the same time, I'm going to read a book. I'm going to pick up a book. King Lear. They just did King Lear, at Shakespeare in the Park here,
mm-hmm.
and I went to go on the final night. I've been kicking myself because they've been doing this for years and years. I've lived here since 2005. First year I've gone, I keep telling myself every year,
yeah.
I'm going to go see Shakespeare in the Park. And finally, King Lear. I go home, and yes, I have several books on Shakespeare. I could have actually read King Lear. No. Christopher Moore's Fool, which is a really warped retelling of King Lear, and it's hysterically funny.
Yeah.
I highly recommend most things by Christopher Moore. Very, very funny writer. And I just had to pick it up. I had to sit there, and it was way too late, and I should not have read like the three chapters of this book that I sat there and read. But it was just because I kept thinking as watching this really fine performances on stage, that the actor who was playing the fool,
mm.
was really good, and he had that he really understood the nature of what the fool was historically,
right?
You know, but also he was funny. I mean, he had one of those deliveries. I mean, this guy knew comic timing. It was, you know, this was a naturally funny person. This is, you can tell when someone is there. And I just kept thinking to myself, okay, now I have to read the R-rated version, because Shakespeare is plenty R-rated, really. But I went and watched a fine theatrical production, and it made me want to go home and read a book.
And that's how it should be.
And that's how it should be.
Yep. Now, we mentioned earlier conversations that we have off microphone, mm. and not recorded for posterity. And we are doing a little bit more of that behind the scenes, photos and videos and things that are going to be available for our Patreon supporters. This is a new thing that we've started, patreon.com/scififorme, where you can pledge your support. It's almost like subscription crowdfunding, as it were, that we're going to be using this to help do more of what we do and try to improve on it with new resources and being able to get to more events and that kind of thing. So we will put a link in the show notes for anybody who's interested in doing that. We also want to encourage you to go visit superherostuff.com. And if you need T-shirts, Atomic Cotton is where we get ours, and we do... we do like the work that they do there. If you have a comment or a thought you'd like to share with us, you can send us an email, h20@scififorme.com, or you can call our hotline, 573-42-SCIFI, and leave us a message there, and we will respond accordingly. And then also on the social media, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google+, Facebook, Tumblr.
On Facebook twice?
Don't we're on Facebook twice? Well, we got to make up for the Google Plus going away.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Sure. So, there is all of that. You can connect with us over there on social media. And that's going to do it for us this week. Timothy Harvey.
Always a pleasure, sir.
And my name is Jason Hunt. This is H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. We want to thank you for listening. We also would like to encourage you to check out some of our other shows here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. And, of course, the latest news you can find over at scififorme.com. We will be back with another episode next week.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.